when you walk into the ring for the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Good day, dear listeners of Blood River Radio. My name is Monica Schaefer, and Eddie the Bombardier Miller has entrusted me today with hosting this show, and I'm so excited about that. And the first thing we'll do, though, is have a prayer, and Eddie actually did pre-record this prayer for you. So let's run that, dear Cameron, and then I'll take over the reins here for the show. Okay.
Almighty God, maker of heaven and earth, of all that's seen and unseen, God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of Eddie Miller, Blood River Radio, the God of Cam, Liberty News Radio, the God of Blood River Radio forever and a day, as long as I have anything to do with this show, we will always worship you, dear God. And Lord, if you will look down upon us, bless Blood River Radio, bless Liberty News Radio, bless everybody on our staff, including Cam and all of our guests and all of our dear listeners. Let us always please you, Lord. And Lord, if you will, let us just give us the wisdom and discernment, who to fight, how to fight. And Lord, we'll always give you all the grace, and we'll always give you all the glory. We ask all this in Jesus' name, amen.
Okay, I am back. I would like to add to that prayer, a prayer for Eddie, because he did something absolutely terrific today. And, you know, as you probably do remember, he turned 75 years old very recently, so he's not 20 anymore, and he ran a marathon today. Now, I don't know if that marathon is finished, but either way, let's just hope and pray that Eddie came through that with flying colors, that he remained healthy and energetic, because that is quite an undertaking for the body and the mind and the spirit. I think that to do such a thing as running a marathon takes a lot of mental energy as well as physical energy. And I would add a spirit into that equation. So good on you, Eddie, for having done that. What an accomplishment. My hat comes off to you. Okay, so I have two wonderful guests with me today, and I'll let them briefly introduce themselves after I tell you who is coming on to join me. Nancy Hitt from Kentucky and Paul Fromm from Ontario, Canada. So Nancy, why don't you just give us in a very brief introduction of yourself, and then I'll have Paul introduce himself, and then we'll get on to the topics that we would like to talk about today. Okay, Nancy, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, Monica, I am in Kentucky. I've lived here almost all my life, and I've been very fortunate to have traveled quite a bit. I lived in England, worked in England, went to South Africa, actually got married in South Africa. Some of these things, of course, started me on the road to rebellion. And I guess I'm still a rebel in many ways, certainly a Southern rebel. But that's part of it. I think travel opens your eyes to some of the problems that we have, actually America has created itself. But and I want to say that I'm very honored to be on the program with two people who have suffered at the hands of liars and the real haters while in Germany and in Canada. And I'm just honored to be with both of you.
Thank you for that, Nancy. And Paul, give a brief. I think you've been on the program before, but perhaps it's been a while. So please give the listeners a brief introduction of yourself.
Yes, it's been a few months since I've been on, but yes, my name is Paul Fromm. I'm the director of the Canadian Association for Free Expression. And as the name suggests, for the last 40 years, we've been fighting for free speech, fighting the numerous enemies of free speech, and trying to create not just to fight the individual cases, but among the general public to turn them on to freedom. And that's one of the things I very much concerns me today, that as opposed to 40 years ago, there are a lot, at least in Canada, a lot of people that they just don't want freedom. And they don't cherish it, and it's almost a dirty word. So I think it's all about freedom, and I certainly agree with Nancy. It's also about rebelling against the dark forces that are trying to take away our liberties.
That's for sure, and things are really accelerating these days. My goodness, it's hard to actually catch our breath with the speed with which the eternal enemy of humanity is rolling out laws and all kinds of draconian measures to try to control the population, who has largely been subjected to years and years of psychological warfare. And so this is where we're at now. I'd like to just say what the main focus for today will be is we'd like to start anyway talking about Germany, Germans, and what has been going on there with their notorious law, paragraph 130 in their criminal code, and that is their infamous Holocaust denial law, even though the word Holocaust does not appear in that law. And the recent thing that was brought to all of our attention was the re-incarceration of a 93-year-old Ursula Haverbeck. Yes, Ursula Haverbeck went back to jail, now this time for a year, and simply for the terrible crime of questioning and not believing their Hollywood version of the tale about World War II, and that would be the holy cause, the thing they've turned into a religion, the Holocaust. So, yeah, this is just an incredible thing. I think they must be very afraid of the truth which is emerging when they have to resort to putting a very elderly lady, 93 years old, into jail. And I'll just tell you something, that in the former East Germany, or really it's Central Germany, but people know what I'm talking about, the old East Germany before the Iron Curtain came down in 1989, they did not jail people past 80 years of age. Or if somebody was already in jail, when they turned 80, they were let out. Yeah, so Ursula Haverbeck, the judge said that, you know, she was, that Ursula's case, I mean, it was, she was unrepentant and she had no remorse. And so really she had no choice but to put her back in jail. Would you like to comment on that? First, Nancy, and then I'll give it over to Paul.
Yes, I have a couple of comments. Those people who refer to Holocaust deniers are not looking at what they actually are. I call them fact checkers, or those who verify, or truth researchers. This is what people are doing. They are looking into the facts. We have to go back to Red Cross access to German camps, which never estimated 6 million deaths. The Red Cross did have access to German work camps, and their accounting certainly didn't come up to 6 million. And we know from research, And here's a comment from something by John Weir. An ancient Jewish prophecy had promised that the Jews would return to the promised land after a loss of 6 million of their people. And this 6 million has been reported and recorded at least since 1869 on 166 occasions before the end of World War II. So that's something that people don't probably hadn't thought about.
It seems to be a magical number. Paul, would you like to chime in on that?
Yes, indeed, as Nancy said, it's been used, it's been put out there a number of times. I think just before the First World War, when the Jews were having some problems in Tsarist Russia, because many of them, you know, had been socialists and revolutionaries, they put out a worldwide appeal saying that 6 million of their confreres, I think, had either died or were in trouble. And then I believe after the First World War, there was another appeal that mentioned the figure 6 million. And what I think it is, we are supposed to take it literally as 5,999,999 plus one. But in fact...
Paul, I hear the music, and I would love for you to pick up on that as soon as we come back from this first break. And so hold that thought.
I'm Pastor Everett Ramsey, pastor of Faith Baptist Church. A congregation of God's covenant people, informed Christians know that we are at the brink of a long-planned one-world government being executed that will not tolerate true Christian faith. There is a way to stop it. Our church has used God's spiritual weapons of warfare many times over the years, and in every case that was properly executed, the Church of Jesus Christ had been delivered. It is called the Court of Divine Justice. David used it many times. Read Psalm 37, Psalm 109. It includes truthful information, repentance, and imprecatory prayers. Blood River Radio is the only radio station I know that supports action based on truth about lies concerning the Confederacy, the Civil Rights Movement, the German people, the true Holocaust, and who the true covenant people of God are, and the sins and failures of the churches, if any of these this means anything to you, and it should, then please say so with your money, as well as prayers. You may obtain information from us about the Courts of Divine Justice by sending your offering and request to Blood River Radio, and we take none of the money.
This is a battle between truth and deceit, a battle between forces that would enslave this country in darkness, and between a media that wants to present you with the truth.
We are being censored. America's news outlets no longer provide the truth. 90% of news outlets in the United States are controlled by 6 corporations. The mission of the Epoch Times is to chase the truth, to ground all statements in fact.
TheEpicTimes.com.
We at Freedom Factor have a passion for our shared American heritage and want to help restore some of that American pride by emphasizing the documents that made us Americans. Our goal is to put pocket constitutions into the hands of every American and in every school. This effort requires your help. Order your pocket constitutions and browse our website at freedomfactor.org to learn how you can help spread the message of freedom. Read it, know it, share it. FreedomFactor.org.
A Venus is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off. You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Okay, we're back now. So, Paul Frum, please continue where you left off. You're talking about the 6 million, and just getting into that, and possibly that they're using it as a figure of speech? I don't know. Is that what you were saying? Please carry on.
See, we're supposed to interpret, we're supposed to understand 6 million as a fact, you know, as in, you know, one more than 5,999,999. In fact, though, it's 6 in the Jewish Kabbalah is a bad number, just like 13 is bad in, you know, in Western European culture quite often. And million, 6 million is like saying, you're having a bad day and somebody asks you, what's wrong? And you say, I have a million problems, you know. Neither you nor they take that literally. It's not a matter of counting. A million is just a way of saying many. And then the 6 million would be, it's an evil number. So because it's happening to their people, it's evil. So hence the number six, you know, rather than five or seven. And that's what was going on there in previous usages of 6 million. That it was just a way of signaling a lot, and it's bad. You know, six is, is more powerful in terms of conveying bad than, say, five or seven.
Mm-hmm. Well, interesting about that, though, because if it is largely symbolic, they don't take kindly to any of us doubting their figures and maybe saying that, gee, what happened to the other 3 million at Auschwitz, that when they reduced their numbers by 3 million, yet 6 minus 3 is still 6, or any other aspect of their number, well, then we get in trouble, don't we? Nancy, do you want to chime in on that? And maybe from there go to this list of persecuted people on that topic?
Yeah. Well, Paul may have a point there, but Monica, they do the Jewish people very much object to discounting that number. I mean, we know this because I'm looking at a list right now that was made up by a friend of, and someone who is a friend of Eddie's, and a lot of these names are new to me, but many of them are familiar. It's a list of 45 individuals who have been persecuted, not just in Germany, but they've been persecuted under this so-called Holocaust denial laws in France, England, Switzerland, of all places, Australia, Poland, Austria. Of course, America likes to rendition or deport people to these countries. Hungary had had somebody also, and of course, these people again were doing basically research trying to find out if there was a legitimate number that even added up to 6 million, and this is how they ended up behind bars. Many of them serving 5 years. Some of them were repeatedly imprisoned or fined. I remember the case of Ernst Zundel at least in 1985 or 1988 when he was on trial in Canada. Canada has had some really terrible hate crime laws, and I thought the poor man had been finally forgiven, but revenge lives on. And so by 2007, he spent 5 years in Germany, and previous to that, 2 years in prison in solitary, I think mainly in solitary in Canada. But he had been deported from this country back to Canada because he had some questions as a native German about what had happened in Germany. So I don't know. The 6 million seems to be a really hot number, one that can get you behind bars or a heavy fine.
That's right. Before I pass it back to Paul, I would like to comment that you have a list of 45 people in front of you, but I want to tell the listener that there are thousands of people who are actually persecuted under the German law, paragraph 130, every year. However, most of those people, they end up with a fine or, you know, restrictions of, you know, going on internet sites or publishing on internet sites, I should say, and those kinds of things. But those 45, I think those are people who have actually been behind bars. And it is not an exhaustive list. There are many more, I would say, especially if you're talking about different countries. Because I don't know how many countries it is up to now. Last count, I think it was 19 European countries, or was it 19 total countries where Holocaust denial is illegal? And right now there are moves afoot to increase that number. And we'll talk about that during the course of these 2 hours today. But Paul, why don't you expand a little bit about the trials that Ernst Zundel had and the trials and tribulations that he had, because I do believe that you were there, were you not?
Yes, for some of them. Well, in 1984 and 88, well, 1984, Ernst was put on trial under a very ancient law about spreading false news. And eventually he was convicted, but the conviction was overturned by the Supreme Court in 1992. But the law was very much misapplied. It referred to, it came out of the mid-19th century and was to try to stop unscrupulous people from spreading financial rumors to stampede people to do something. For instance, if you put out your rumor that there'd been a drought in England and there was a real wheat shortage, it might get Canadian farmers to plant a lot extra wheat in the hopes of cashing in on it. But in fact, that hadn't happened. And so at harvest time, because there's now a glut on the market, the price falls, and, you know, a speculator could do quite well. Well, but that was what the law was for. It never had anything to do. It was never intended for historical, for comments about history. So that was his first go-round. Well, actually, before that, the post office tried to revoke his postal mailing rights because he was putting out what they called hate. He fought that to a standstill. And then in 1997, the Human Rights Commission, on the agitation of a number of the Jewish groups, came after him for under the section of the Human Rights Act that makes it a discriminatory practice to expose or to put out material that's likely to expose a privileged minority to hatred or contempt. But that had to be material communicated electronically. And that law had originally been brought in the late 70s after the agitation of a number of Jewish groups to try to get a number of individuals who were using telephone answering machine messages. And that just shows you how far the technology has come. You know, there was a time in the mid-70s that was cutting edge. You would take one of these newfangled telephone answering machines and you'd record a message, and then you circulate your number, people call up, and they get your message. And, you know, you might change that message once or twice a week. The John Birch Society did that a lot. I was a member of the Birch Society back then, and this was, what they thought was quite a good way to reach people. So not to allow anybody to have a dissenting opinion, the Canadian Jewish Congress and several others pressured the Canadian government to put that into the Canadian Human Rights Act. So Ernst was charged with the Zundel site. It was a very interesting case because, number one, Ernst didn't run the Zundel site. Ingrid Rimland did. She would eventually become his wife, but she was down in Tennessee, and she ran and managed the Zundel site, despite the fact that
I hear the music, Paul. Thanks for that, and we'll be right back after this break.
proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Kenneth Burns.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and Secretary of State Antony Blinken are coming to his country. It will be the first time that senior officials from the Biden administration have visited Ukraine since Russia invaded it a couple of months ago. The Pentagon declined to confirm the visit, and the White House had no comment on Zelensky's remarks. A parade of foreign dignitaries had made their way to Kyiv to show their support for the Ukrainian people. Word of the visit comes as at least 8 people have been killed and 18 people were wounded in 2 missile strikes on Odessa. In addition, the Kremlin has resumed attacks on a steel plant in Mariupol, an attempt to root out the last bit of resistance. The southern port city is seen as key to Russia's strategy. The Kremlin has claimed it has control of Mariupol, with the exception of the plant. This is USA Radio News.
This story is called The Ugly Truth About Timeshares. If you think you've done your family a favor by buying a timeshare, well, you need my help. Hello, I'm Chuck McDowell, founder and CEO of Wesley Financial Group. 10 years ago, I started helping folks cancel their timeshare. And the process started what's now called the timeshare cancellation industry. Timeshare is the only thing that you can buy that you can't tell me how much it's going to cost or when it's going to end. When you buy a timeshare, you give them a blank check to fill out any amount they want for annual maintenance and assessment fees. Sounds crazy, right? Well, the crazy thing is, this never ends. Stop the insanity today. Call my office now. I guarantee if we can't cancel your timeshare, you'll pay nothing.
Were you lied to when buying a timeshare and want out? Get the facts about timeshare cancellation. Call Wesley now for your free information kit. 800-478-7733. 800-478-7733. 800-478-7733.
Ahead of a presidential runoff election in France, President Emmanuel Macron has the lead over his rival Marine Le Pen. A victory for him would mean he would be the first French president in 2 decades to win a second term. Opinion polls on him winning range in margin from 6 to 15%. A Black Lives Matter activist in Memphis, Tennessee, will not face charges that she illegally registered to vote. Shelby County prosecutors dropped charges against Pamela Moses. She was convicted last November and sentenced to 6 years in prison this past January. Moses sought a new trial in February, which was granted due to the corrections department failing to turn over a necessary document. Moses, who had previous felonies, sought to restore her voting rights, thinking that she was eligible. Wall Street adding another bad week on the year. The Dow dropped nearly 2% overall. The Nasdaq lost 2.5% on the week. It's also the third straight losing week for the S&P 500. You are listening to USA Radio News.
Okay, dear listeners, we are back. And I want to pass the mic right back to Paul Fromm, who is telling us some important history about the Ernst Zundel trials, or the infamous the Great Holocaust trials of the 1980s, and those things that happened to him. So please take it away, Paul.
Yeah, the Zundel site case lasted for 5 years, believe it or not. Now, it would be wrong to say, 5 solid years of daily hearings. Now, that wasn't the way it was. There'd be long adjournments, and then every time we lost, we would go to the Federal Court of Appeals to try to get, we did occasionally win, but these are procedural things. So anyway, it started in 97 and ended in 2002. The way the law had been written back then, it was to communicate telephonically, and that was meant to prevent telephone answering machines being used to spread ideas that the privileged minorities don't like. Well, our argument was this was the internet. This isn't a telephone answering machine. And that was a big point, but in the end, we lost that. The Zundel site was eventually found to be guilty of discrimination, but it didn't amount to anything because we argued from the very beginning you don't have any jurisdiction. It's run by an American citizen, Ingrid Rivlin. It's located in the United States. We're wasting our time, but that didn't prevent a tremendous amount of money and the time spent. Well, then, partway through the proceedings, Ernst, for a number of reasons, gave up on Canada. He was going to marry Ingrid Rivlin. He was going to, he felt he'd done his part, and he was going to retire down to Tennessee, East Tennessee, where they were going to have an art gallery and various other things, because he was, among other things, an artist. Well, that is very, very complicated, but in 2003, he was arrested by U.S. immigration authorities at gunpoint and for being illegally in the country. The bottom line is he was not illegally in the country. He'd been working on his land, his immigration status, his green card status, all sorts of applications and gone in and the FBI interview. Things were all going very well, but there was one document that did not get to the whoever was deciding this, and I think it came right from the top. You've got him deported. So he was to be deported back to Canada because he'd been a landed immigrant here. And we thought, well, that's not very good, but, he hasn't committed a crime in Canada. Well, there had been, after 9/11, there had been changes in some of our laws, and they developed a new regulation that you could be deported from Canada if you were considered to be a threat to national security. Now, Ernst, that can happen to landed immigrants as well, not citizens. But Ernst had never become a citizen. He tried three times, and he had been turned down. It was totally political. So, okay, he's back in Canada. He's a landed immigrant, but not a citizen. And they want to deport him as a threat to national security. Well, that fight went on for 2 years. He was held in solitary confinement, and at some point also denied necessary dental treatment.
My understanding, Paul, my understanding of it too, and correct me if I'm wrong, was they actually, in some ways, you could say they tortured him. Wasn't the cell cold? They left the lights on 24/7. Is that just rumors, or is that true?
No, that's true. If you are the victim of a national security certificate, there isn't a trial. There's a hearing. And you'd say, well, okay, you got a chance to make your case, and the government makes its case, and that gets decided. Well, it's not quite so simple. There may be evidence brought in or witnesses, and your lawyer does not get the chance necessarily to cross-examine the witnesses, challenge the evidence. Some evidence may be a national security document. And so all, the defense lawyer, for much of it was Doug Christie, would know sort of a general summary. And it's the same thing with a witness. One of the key points in Anglo-Saxon justice is to be able to face your accuser, and which would be the witness, to be able to see the person and cross-examine them. And, that in-person presence is vital in terms of determining credibility. Anyway, it was very, very hard fought. It was in many ways a complete farce. One member of the security service, the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, who did testify, said, we were trying to ask, well, why do you say he's a threat to national security? He had never been convicted of an offense like that. He paid all his taxes. He employed people. He was scrupulous
about everything. He's also totally nonviolent. Well, this is the train of thought. It was absolutely a mind blower. Sometime in the 70s, I think, Ernst Zunzel, on a physical stage, had attended several lectures by William Pierce of the National Alliance. Okay. He never joined the Alliance. He never gave them any money. But William Pierce wrote a book called The Turner Diaries. Supposedly, Timothy McVeigh used that book as inspiration for the bombing of the FBI building in Oklahoma City. That may or may not, I don't think he did, but okay, that's what they said. And therefore, Ernst Zunzel's a terrorist. I mean, it's insane. Ernst Zunzel had nothing to do with Oklahoma City. He never knew Timothy McVeigh. And if McVeigh did use that book as inspiration, Ernst had nothing to do with it.
He only attended a meeting and listened to him talk. That's bizarre. I hadn't actually heard that, Paul, that this convoluted. Nancy, why don't you comment on that?
Well,
and then we'll...
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
All I can say is the laws are made for us, and they're not made for the people who actually make the laws. That's so evident. You know, we always talk about this is a nation of laws, but we are the only ones who have to abide by laws. The people, the big wheels, they could care less. They can come up with convoluted answers, just like Paul is talking about. I just want to pitch out something that happened in Toronto to this poor man, Ernst Zunzel. His home and art studio was burned in an arson attack, and he had been unable to obtain insurance. So, you know, everything was going against him from the very as soon as he spoke out about the Jewish questions.
Wow, unbelievable. I knew about the firebombed home, but I didn't know that he had been unable to get insurance. Not that that would have brought the books back, the thousands of irreplaceable archives that he had that burned, right?
Right.
Right. There's something very interesting about that. It was in 1995, and that was the 50th anniversary of the defeat of National Socialist Germany. There's a lot of stuff in this that's very Kabbalistic. You know, I mean, why that date? Why not a week before or a week after? It was absolutely
eerie. So are you saying it happened on May 8th of 1995? Or
yes.
Wow. Oh, that's another thing that I did not know.
And there's something else. The perpetrator has never been found. There was all sorts of rumor, and I think there was a little bit of I think they had some surveillance. They had a description of a character, but the crime was never solved. However, the head of the Jewish Defense League in the States, he's dead now, Irv Rubin, showed up a few weeks later, and they had to throw him out of.
Yeah, Paul, so he took credit. I hear the music, and we'll carry on that note after this break, the last break in the first hour. Okay, we'll be right back.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, "If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people," unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
Okay, we're back. Dear listeners, thank you for hanging in there with us. I'm just so thrilled to have these two wonderful guests, and we'll hand it back to Paul to wrap up with what he was telling us. It's riveting, really, what happened with the Zundel Holocaust trials. So please do carry on. Thanks.
As Ernest and his crew, we're beginning to try to get the place cleaned up and so on, they threw out an intruder who turned out to be Irv Rubin from the Jewish Defense League, even though he's from the United States. Well, several years later, an American friend of mine at a gun show was approached by this guy who was very, very boastful. And he said, "Do you know who I am?" And she said, "No." And he said, "Well, I'm Irv Rubin of the Jewish Defense League. And we're the ones who burned down Ernst Zundel's house. Do you know who he is?" "No." Now, that's just one person's testimony, but I find it very significant.
Oh, definitely.
Well, they're probably getting high fives in Israel, and he's probably now living on a cushy home in Israel.
No, he's wherever the Lord chose to send him. He committed suicide in prison some years ago.
Okay, so he's moved on. He's moved on. Well, there you go. I won't say rest in peace for that one because, yeah. So I wanted to just mention about how judges, even if they want to act independently, in some countries anyway, certainly in the Federal Republic of Germany, and by the way, we should remember to call it that and not Germany because it's an insult to Germans. It's an occupied territory is what it is. And the FRD, mm-hmm. the Federal Republic of Germany, and it has no sovereignty. It is purely occupied by the victors of World War II, which never really ended. And of course, it carried on with psychological warfare weapons, re-educating generations of Germans so that now many Germans, you could say most Germans, act in a self-destructive manner and are behaving in a way that is like collectively suicidal, I guess you could say. And so really that's an induced state of mental illness, I would say, because if you act in a self-destructive way, whether it's as an individual or as a group, I would say you could call that mental illness. But anyway, I just relate this story about what happened with Günter Deckert. And this is a man who fought hard over the years and he has died recently. Rest in peace, Günter Deckert. He was a great warrior for the truth in Germany. And he did spend, I think in total, up to 6 years in jail. Correct me if I'm wrong, Paul or Nancy, if you know about that. But anyway, in 1992 already, he was before the courts in Germany. And there, I guess on, you know, he had been questioning or stating things that didn't believe the official story about 6 million being gassed and all that in Germany. And so he was before the courts. At that time, the judge, let me just see the name here. I wrote it down. I just can't find it in the moment, but that's okay. There was a judge who actually said, well, this is a decent man. He seems like, you know, the things he has said, they make sense. And I am going to give him a 1-year suspended sentence. So in other words, he did not paint Günter Deckert as the monster, like what is now done with so-called Holocaust deniers, which is a faulty term anyway. And what happened next was quite unbelievable, but he was skewered, roasted, smeared by people from all walks, like from the churches, from the government, like all the way to the top. Helmut Kohl was one of the people who was reported to, you know, he was reported in the media as saying some very inflammatory statements about Günter Deckert, about the judge that allowed this man to walk free, who had doubted this Hollywood version of the Holocaust in Germany. And so that judge, plus another judge, there were two involved, and both of them were actually thinking and acting independently, and they were annihilated, like their jobs, they were kicked out of their professions, and in every which way, like reputationally, economically, and career-wise, they were absolutely just roasted. They were skewered. So that, it shows you the pressure under which the judges are, even if they are actually, you know, people who want to do the right thing and think independently. They are really under a lot of pressure. And I know that my lawyer said to me at one point when I failed to get out on these bail hearings that I had before the trial even began. This is the 2018 Schaefer sibling trial in Germany. And, you know, they kept me there because they didn't want me to go and run away to Canada where they couldn't get their claws on me for this German law. And of course, the bail hearings, it's like they're verdict of those had nothing to do with the bail hearing itself. I felt like I was at a different meeting than the judge was when they gave their reasons for keeping me in behind bars. They were just making it up as they went along. And so my lawyer said to me, well, you know, these judges, if they are seen to be lenient with a Holocaust denier, then they will be absolutely skewered by the media, the mainstream media in Germany. Mm-hmm. So they have to be seen to be very, very harsh. So that's, mm-hmm. you know, that's how it is. But still, I think in the end, like this judge that judged on Ursula Haverbeck, it is still, I think it was a she, it still should be her independent ability to make judgment. Otherwise, what are the judges there for? I mean, they are just, mm-hmm. you know, minions for who is the hidden hand behind all this? I'll hand it over to you, Nancy. Would you like to comment on any of that or carry on?
Well, I have a question. Since you've been in the docket, I have a question. Maybe you can answer this. I find it really unusual. And it may only apply to so-called Holocaust deniers. That there is not a stenographer in the courtroom that even covers or transcribes what is taking place. Is it strictly limited to people like you, or is that true in every German court? How can they have a trial without having a stenographer recording what's going on? I don't understand that.
Yeah, Nancy, that's a good question. But I'll tell you this, and actually, I don't know the answer to your question, whether this is the case for, you know, let's say you're in court for fraud or just, you know, knocking somebody over on the street or whatever, or petty theft. I don't actually know if there's transcripts for those, but I doubt it. But here's the thing. all the courts in Germany, and I think that's the case here too, but I'm not sure. Maybe Paul can answer that. But they are all private enterprises, and they are not working for a national sovereign state, a national government, because there is no such thing. Germany is a, or the Federal Republic of Germany is a non-governmental entity. It's a commercial enterprise. It's nothing to do with a sovereign national state that represents the people or anything like that. And it just doesn't really exist as a country other right. than it. There's an organizational entity. Actually, I should correct myself there. The Third Reich still exists on mm-hmm. paper. They did never sign a peace treaty at the end of the war. The army, you know, yeah. they stopped the bombs and they capitulated that way. But the Third Reich does still exist in theory. Back to you, Nancy.
In theory, that's the same thing that is, we say, happened with the Confederacy, that they did not sign a peace treaty with the Yankees in the North. But, you know, another thing I found out through the conviction of Sylvia Stoltz and Horst Mueller, that what
Horst
you were
Mahler.
Saying, that there was never, that the so-called government of Germany is still an occupation government. And I have said for years, the Americans need to leave that country. Why are we still occupying Germany? It's just ridiculous. But we set up the government and embedded these Jews into the government. After the country fell, that's exactly what we did.
Well,
so,
let's be clear.
That's
right.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but let's be clear. Mm-hmm. When we say we and the Americans and all that, but let's be clear who is running the show, actually. It's that same said group of people that you're not allowed to criticize, lest you be called anti-Semitic or something like that.
Oh,
right?
My goodness, please don't. But I want to commend you and your brother, because I know that Paul Fromm is giving you an award through the Canadian Association of Free Expression. Well-deserved George Orwell Free Speech Award of 2022, and you and your brother certainly deserve it.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, I'm glad you announced that, because we're very happy to give the award to two very, very deserving people. Monica, of course, for her work and her video work, and of course, having served time in a German jail for the nonviolent expression of her political views, and similarly, her brother, who's a tireless evangelist. I've never met anybody so positive and joyous, despite all the terrible things that have happened to him. The George Orwell Award was started by Doug Christie back in the 1980s. It was given every year to somebody who had made a contribution for free speech. That's what it was all about. And the last one was in 2013, the year Doug died. And so it kind of faded away. But I talked to his widow, Kelty Zubko, and CAFE revived it last year. We gave it to Dr. James Sears, who's also in jail now for under Canada's notorious hate law. He's in jail for satire. He had a newspaper called Your War News, and he wrote a lot of really biting satire and just fantastic cartoons. And a certain privileged group didn't like it, and so he's in jail. So it's a real honor to extend this award to Monica and to Alfred.
Well, I hear the music coming on, but, you know, after the break, and this is the top of the hour, so it's a little bit longer break. We're going to transition into the second hour, but we're going to bring it over to this side of the ocean a little bit and talk about some satire as well, that Nancy has done some. And we'll see you after the break. And please stay with us. And it's, see you then.